Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Welcome to Stagecraft, Variety's theater podcast, your backstage pass to revealing conversations with stars, creators, and industry leaders, on Broadway, off Broadway, and beyond. I'm Gordon Cox. On this episode of Stagecraft, I'm talking to Leslie Odom Jr. He's an actor who will probably need no introduction for most listeners of this podcast, because he's the guy who originated the role of Aaron Burr, sir, in Hamilton, and won a Tony Award for his performance. Since then, he's appeared on screen in Murder on the Orient Express, Glass Onion, Abbott Elementary, and the upcoming movie The Exorcist Believer. He was nominated for an Oscar for his performance as Sam Cooke in One Night in Miami. He's also a recording artist who's released 4 albums and counting. But in all those years since he left Hamilton in 2016, he hasn't been back on Broadway until now. He's playing the lead role in Ossie Davis's comedy Pearly Victorious, and he's in the virtual studio with me to tell us about the play that brought him back to Broadway at last. Hey, Leslie, thanks for joining me.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you, Gordon.
So we're talking just before the show is about to open, and you've been in previews for a couple of weeks now. How's the show going? How's the audience reacting?
Oh, it's been... I'm a fan of Broadway and the theater. You know, I've seen a lot more theater than I've done, as you can imagine. Mm-hmm. But I've done a few Broadway shows as well, and this one is special. You know, when I'm talking to family and friends around the country and in the surrounding states. You know, I grew up in Philadelphia, which is just a couple of hours away. I'm like, don't miss this one. You know, as an avid theater goer, I've never seen anything like Pearly Victorious, and I've certainly never been a part of something that's quite like it. It is such a special piece. People are getting it. They're loving it. And it's just a really joyful time at the Music Box. We're so thankful. Because you never know, you know, you never know if people are going to feel about a piece the way that you do.
Yeah. Yeah. When you say you've never seen a piece quite like this, what can you expand a little bit more on kind of what the piece you think is offering that you haven't seen?
Yeah, it's the joy quotient meets, you know, that joy. I'll say this. Mr. Davis sat down to write a piece about his childhood growing up in the rural segregated South. This would have been, you know, when Mr. Davis was growing up, it would have been the 30s, 40s, 50s, you know, in rural segregated Georgia. Those are hard times, you know. And I mean, he's seen some stuff, he lived through some stuff, and he wanted to write about it. And what he realized early on in his process was that it was too painful to ask an audience to sit through. And so the piece in its inception, you know, started as this act of generosity. He wants so desperately for an audience to come to this farm and meet the people he grew up with in the place that he loved and the only place he ever knew is home. But he also wants you to be able to endure it. He wants you to be able to stand it. And so there is this joy that, you know, the audience is not the only one that gets to participate in that joy. We get it as well. So it is so much fun and earns the kind of, he picks his moment the way great writers do. You know, he does pick his moment where he decides to say something, you know, that thesis. He gets a chance to say what he intended to say, but by then, you know, the audience is so disarmed and they're so happy to be there. They've been having such a wonderful time that I think that they can really hear it, you know, yeah, in a way that they wouldn't have been able to hear it if we'd said it in the first 5 minutes.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. And Pearly Victorious is a relatively short play. You're doing it in one act on Broadway. And yet Pearly is a big, challenging role. You do a lot in that, you know, 105 minutes or whatever. Yeah. How's it treating you?
When I am at my best as an artist, when I'm kindest to myself, you know, I'm choosing material that is worth the effort. Because everything that you do, everything that I do at this point is there's some degree of sacrifice, whether it's the toll it takes on my body or the time away from my family, or, you know, there's some sort of sacrifice involved in almost every job that I take. And so, as I said, when I'm at my wisest, my kindest to myself, you know, I'm choosing material that is worthy of the sacrifice, and Pearly Victorious certainly is. Never so far, it does not take more than it gives. And so I am back with my college voice teacher, just making sure that I'm not doing any damage to my voice. And I'm a little older than the last time I was on Broadway, so I have to take my warm-ups very seriously. You know, I get to the theater about 2 hours before the show, and I do a nice, gentle warm-up, you know, of my voice and my body during that time so that I can make sure I'm not doing any kind of damage to myself. But other than that, so far, so good. You know, my voice comes back with a good night's sleep. You know, I'm sort of tired by the end of each show. Two show days are a little tough, but so far, so good.
Yeah. And Pearly Victorious is a play you've wanted to do for a number of years now. When did you first encounter the play, and why was it something that, when did you know that it was something you really wanted to do?
I was in high school when I first encountered it. There's, you know, there's probably about 10 to 15 plays that if you're a young Black actor, they get shoved in your hands. I imagine, you know, if you're a young woman, or if you're a young Asian actor, if you're a young, you know, Latino actor, you know, there's a handful of pieces that people ahead of you give you, you know, hey, look at this thing. And Pearly Victorious was one of those pieces. And so, you know, it has monologues in it that you can do for auditions, and scenes you can work on for scene study class. And so I'd been aware of it. I don't know where it came from when I'll say that better. I've learned to not question where inspiration comes from. You know, when I'm given an idea, when an idea comes to my heart, when I'm inspired to do something, I assume that those are my marching orders from God, and I go about the business of walking it down, seeing if I can make good on that inspiration. Because chances are, if you have that great idea, you know, I kind of operate under the idea that, or the belief that somebody else could quite possibly have the idea at the same time, or it's at the even more tragic would be if you don't do it, it doesn't get done. If there's some great idea that comes to your mind, comes to your spirit, something that you are inspired to do, something that you can see it, you can see the way it's supposed to happen and how it's supposed to feel. Yeah, almost the sadder version of that is if you don't do it, it'll never get done. It'll never get done in the way that you could have done it. So, yeah, there was some smart interviewer like yourself asked me, I think the day after the Tony Awards in 2016, what was next, what I wanted to work on next. And I said, I've always wanted to do Pearly Victorious. I don't know. Yeah. So I don't know where that came from. It took about 6 or 7 years and here we are.
Yeah. A lot of theater goers, including me, first encountered the character of Pearly and his story in the musical. There's a musical adaptation from 1970. Right. And of course, you sing yourself. Did it ever occur to you to look at the musical as opposed to the play?
Yeah, I just knew that the character and the material was so challenging, you know. And what I was really looking for, as you can imagine, was, you know, what would be a bigger challenge than what I'd just done? I mean, Lynn had given me the greatest challenge up until that point of my career. I mean, without question. And so when that happens, you go, God, okay. I mean, what would be harder than this? Pearly Victorious might be, you know, playing Sam Cooke might be, you know, I mean, those kinds of things. Yeah, I mean, it's really just been that. I mean, what would be, in what way can I challenge myself? In what way, what's a new frontier? What's a new mountain to climb? And so that's what it was. And it didn't matter to me whether it was the musical or the play. Yeah, didn't matter to me. But I was, man, I'm so happy that it was important to Mr. Davis's three children, Nora, Hasna, and Guy. They make up the estate now of the D. Davis family. Two girls and a boy. Guy is their son. Guy, fun fact, has written all of the music for our production. This gorgeous music. It's somewhere in between classical and folk country music. It's this gorgeous incidental music that we have in the play that really helps us drop right into the world of that farm. Anyway, it was important to them that their father's words were, if the piece should ever make it back to the stage, that it would make it back in its original form first. And that if the musical followed or whatever, the way that it did the first time around, that would be fine with them. But I'm so happy that we're doing this play. I mean, people are coming and it's what Mr. Davis always wanted. You know, they're receiving this play and recognizing it in the way that he'd always hoped, you know, as an American classic, because that's what it is. I think we're going to see productions of Pearly Victorious pop up all over the country after this.
Yeah. Are you enjoying doing the kind of full-out comedy that Pearly is? Because you are as much a comic character, playing a comic character as much as a heroic character.
Very much.
Yeah, tell me a little bit about how you balance kind of, I mean, there's the message of the play, but then there's also the fact that Pearly is often kind of ridiculous, right? Like, as all the characters are.
Yeah.
Play, right?
Oh, comedy is, I think I probably am, at this point, maybe a little more thought of as a dramatic actor, but I mean, there's some really silly moments in Hamilton. There's certainly some silly, you know, I'm always looking for those moments. I mean, because that's life. I don't know. Yeah. My father, was, you know, thinking about him as a child. He's a very different man now in his old age, but certainly as a child, you know, my dad was totally absurd. You know what I mean? Like he was so gallant and brave and ridiculous and terrifying and all that stuff, you know, and I had those kind of figures all over my family. My grandfather was a man like that too. Yeah. I mean, oof. There were some three-act plays that I saw. So to Yeah, to bring all of that to Pearlie, you know, if the stakes are big enough, if the fear is big enough, if the danger is big enough, what ridiculous thing won't we do? You know, I'll climb up the rafters up into the top of the theater, and you know, to run away from a real kind of danger. I'll jump down and learn to fly on the way down if something was trying to chase me from up there. So we certainly are wading around in a world with that kind of danger, with those kind of stakes. Mm-hmm. And then it helps tremendously to be across from one of the great comedians of our time, Carrie Young, two-time Tony Award nominated actress, who's just brilliant as Ludie Bell. If you don't have any interest in seeing me as Pearlie before, you've got to see Carrie Young in one of the performances of the season, if not the performance of the season. She's so special.
Yeah. And you're also working with a very busy director, Kenny Leon, on the show. And tell me a little bit about how his perspective and how his take on the show has influenced kind of what you're doing and your work on the character.
Well, Kenny grew up on a farm, just like the one that is depicted in our play. And he grew up not far from, you know, he grew up in Florida, but that northern tip, which is, you know, the neighbor to southern Georgia. And so he brought us that, you know, veracity and understanding the sounds and smells and sights that we are trying so hard to evoke from the stage. And then Kenny's just, I've only really worked with, you know, one other director. You know, Regina reminded me, or Kent, you know, my experience with Kenny is a lot like the experience I had with Regina. And then
this is on One Night in Miami, we should say.
That's right. And then the great Regina King. Yes, I should say her full name. But Kenny is, his wisdom is unlike many, many directors. He's just extraordinary. He made a company of us. He made an ensemble of us. He dropped us all into the same world. He keeps us focused on truth, and the dignity of our very, very specific experience. These are people that if you, grew up in the South, or if you have family members that grew up in the South, you know, you will recognize your experience of knowing these people. And then if you didn't, it's just a wonderful opportunity to get to know, as W.B. Du Bois, you know, wrote about it, just to get to know the souls of Black folk. You know, this is who we are.
I'll have more with Leslie right after the break. Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
And now here's more with the actor, singer, and producer, Leslie Odom Jr. As you mentioned, this is your first time on Broadway since Hamilton. How is it feeling to be back on Broadway and in the Broadway community?
There's nowhere I'd rather be. If there was, I'm very thankful, very grateful for all of the wonderful opportunities that have come my way since being a part of that original company. I'm so glad that I don't have to just choose, you know, to be on stage, that I can make my albums every now and again and make a movie and pop up on a TV show. Those are really all one, write books. You know, those I love it all. But if I did have to choose between you and me, you know, I would only be in a great play once every few years. It's there's just nothing like it. My training prepared me for it. It's what I started doing. You know, I thought that I would only ever be on stage, you know. I say this only sort of in jest, you know. I was 13 years old when a show came out called Rent that changed my life. And my highest dream for myself, the biggest thing I could ever imagine, was that I would one day be in Rent. And I would do that show until I turned 40 or something, and then I would retire and go do something else. I mean, I didn't think that there was an industry beyond that show. That was the dream. I ended up doing the show. I was 17 years old when I went into that show on Broadway. And so I got to see what it was like to be a professional and work alongside professionals. And I got my equity card and all that stuff. And so after that only was I able to dream about what a career might be beyond that show. But I still feel in a whole lot of ways, I have to say, like, I'm just really trying to be a part of pieces of work that make me feel the way that show made me feel. That's all I'm ever trying to do. And Hamilton certainly was that. And Pearly Victorious absolutely is that.
You're also on the producing team of Pearly Victorious. Tell me a little bit about that impulse to produce as well as, create.
I just have to tell you, I'm the happiest that I've ever been. I was sitting across from my producing partner last night after the 8th show of the week, and I was just telling her how happy I am. At this time in my life, it's just, there's always been something in every experience that I've been a part of. You know, there's always been something that I felt like I couldn't express, something I couldn't say, some obstacle, some, you know, great challenge emotionally or professionally, you know, spiritually in the business. And so I've just been tied in knots, you know, for 20, 25 years, you know, always. And this is the first, Nicolette was saying, well, it's the first one where you are fully expressed. I'm not the only voice in the room. I don't even have to be the loudest voice in the room, but producing alongside Jeffrey Richards and the rest of our producing team, they've allowed me a voice. I get to be heard in the room. If there's something that bothers me or something that I can contribute that I think could be helpful, I'm listened to, I'm heard. They may make another decision, which is fine, but I'm not tied up in knots because I got to express myself. I got to say what I believe and what I think. And I'm just a valued member of a team, of a community. And so it's just so satisfying to be able to have that part of the experience, to be able to answer the needs of the people around me. You know, if my fellow castmates, if there's people in the building that have things that they're feeling, I get to be a part of problem solving and making sure that other people feel heard and valued. It's just the healthiest, most gorgeous process I've ever been a part of. Process.
There are a number of well-known producers who have signed on to Pearly. You've got like Samuel L. Jackson and LaTanya Richardson Jackson and Felicia Rashad and Kerry Washington and Nnamdi Asomugha and Alan Alda, who was in the original production of Pearly, by the way. Tell me a little bit about kind of what the function of kind of well-known producers is. Like, how do they help a show connect with an audience?
Sure. That is a, you know, I can kind of remember when that started happening more and more often on the scene. You know, the first one that I can, that was like a sort of a big deal. Of course, it had happened from time to time before then, but I remember when Jay-Z presented Fela on Broadway, you know, and that was like a, that was a thing. It's, we are a part of a generation that is continuing to try to grow an audience, develop an audience on Broadway, to let Black and Brown communities know through our messaging that Broadway is a place that we are welcome on stage and in the audience, you know, and that kind of thing needs to, it's, it, there's a, that's a multi-pronged, you know, agenda, you know, set of things that we have to do. And so part of it is that, you know, part of it is getting people, really well-known people who are aligned with the work in some way, spiritually, emotionally, you know, that they can co-sign that this is like, hey, I, this has my stamp of approval. And maybe you don't know, this work in particular. Maybe you haven't heard of Leslie Odom Jr. Maybe you only know him as Aaron Burr or you know, and so, you know, Samuel Jackson's going to say this has my stamp of approval. LaTanya's going to say that. Carrie's going to say that. And so it's very helpful to us to help to get the word out. You know, this is only Broadway's second year, but it's not, by the way, it's not, it can't always keep the doors open. You know, there have been, Fela was an example where it did. I saw Fela, I think, two or three times. Fela was an extraordinary piece of theater. My goodness. It had, you know, these like, it was about, you know, Fela Kuti, and it had these like, I don't know, 12, 13 women always around him. Bill T. Jones choreographed this thing. And those women, you could come to the show and pick a new woman every show. I mean, they had these deep, rich, you know, lives all their own. And they were just so gorgeous and fascinating. And the movement was so, oh my God. But Fela, you know, they didn't really latch on and find an audience. So they closed early. But this is only the second year back after Broadway's largest shutdown in its history. And so a great deal of the audience was lost to COVID, God rest their souls. We lost a fair amount of the audience to, you know, people moving away. And then, you know, when something's shut down for, what was it, 2-3 years, my God, you know, some people find other ways to entertain themselves. Like the need that theater filled in people, they fill in other ways. And so anyway, I believe in the theater. I believe in its usefulness and its necessity. You know, I believe in the theater for the health of an American society. And so we're going to fight the good fight. And Kerry and Namdi and Alan Alda have partnered with us to fight that fight.
Yeah, yeah. You also have done a lot of work in film and TV, none of which we can particularly talk about right now because you are on strike at the moment. But I can't ask you about your, you mentioned the albums you've released and your work as a recording artist. What, tell me about that sort of facet of your work and what the appeal of, you know, just the musician side of you is.
Thank you for asking. We, it's just been that, you know, after Hamilton, it was kind of, I had been doing, I'd only really been doing television before Hamilton, you know, that's what I'd been doing mostly. I went out to LA and I was doing guest spots and recurrings and, you know, I was having a whole lot of fun doing that. And so Hamilton happens and, you know, something like that. It's a ticket. It's an opportunity to make your dreams come true. And so I didn't want to continue to do the things that I was doing before Hamilton. It's like, well, what can I do now that nobody would have ever let me do before this. And music was the first thing that I could think of. So I've put out 4 albums, two very successful Christmas albums that's been a wonderful, a really meaningful and like wonderful delight that people have really welcomed these projects into their homes. That's a big thing, you know, to be perennial with people, you know, part of their traditions, a part of the thing that they, every single year, they make you a part of their celebration with their family. That's a really intimate and special thing. I have a new record coming out this fall. A single will be out in 2 weeks. Single's called Show Me. And this is, as they all are, you know, this is the most personal album to date. My producer / manager / best friend, Joseph Abate, who I've made all of these albums with, he told me when we made our first album, he said, at some point, I don't want you to have any more secrets. I want you to whisper your secrets onto these albums. Tell us who you are. Tell us what you're afraid of. Tell us what you're ashamed of. Tell us everything. And so, yeah, this record, it's been a really, after a year of some monumental personal growth and just upheaval in my life, that is waiting and coming for everybody. I'm not special, you know. Mm-hmm. So it happens to everybody, you know, where the ground gets really unsure beneath you, and you got to face your demons, face your shadows. That's what I did, and I made it to the other side, I wrote some songs about it. So I'm looking forward to this being out and people hearing this music.
Yeah. You also, as you alluded to, you wrote a book in 2018. It's an autobiography called Failing Up, How to Take Risks, Aim Higher, and Never Stop Learning. And that was kind of about imparting some of the lessons you'd learned along the way, right?
Yeah.
What was the... first of all, is continuing to write... are you interested in doing more writing along those lines?
Yeah, I've started a really wonderful friendship with my publishers at Fywell and Friends. They came to me with the idea for that book. You know, they thought that I had a book in me, and had a wonderful experience writing that with them. So the paperback edition of that book is going to be out early next year. I'm going to write a new preface for it, and kind of punch it up a little bit. But we're finally, after all these years, getting a paperback edition, which is I'm super excited about. And I did the children's book with them as well. Right. Is there more writing in the future? Quite possibly. You know, if Fywell asked me to, yeah, quite possibly. I'm excited to write the preface. You know, there is actually, you know, another chapter that I think that I can, yeah.
That was the question I was going to ask. Is actually if Failing Up was about imparting lessons, and that came out in 2018, what is the biggest lesson you have learned since then?
This is what the whole album was about, too. I mean, the first thing you're going to need when you really decide to become the artist you want to be, the person you want to be, the man you want to be, the father you want to be, really, the first thing you're going to need is a loving heart. And that is easier said than done. You know, when they were, the Pharisees were kind of questioning Jesus, you know, trying to trip him up, because they had all these laws. There were so many laws, rules for people to follow. And they asked him, what are the, forgive me, I'm not a biblical scholar. I revisited this not too long ago and I was struck by it. But I think they asked him, what are the 2 most important laws? You know, knowing that it's impossible to answer something like that because there's so many laws. And so whatever he says is going to be the wrong answer. And they know that. And he does answer them. The first one is, you know, love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, body, and soul. And number 2, says the two things that are the most important thing. Number two is to love thy neighbor as thyself. Love thy neighbor as thyself. If we could just do those two things. But you know what? So many of us get tripped up on that one. How simple is that? You know why? Because we're not loving ourselves well either. We are loving our neighbors as we love ourselves, and we treat ourselves like shit too. And so this past year and a half has really been finally and firstly learning how to love myself. I don't stand a chance at loving you or Nicolette or these two beautiful babies or my castmates or these audiences. You know, I don't stand a chance at loving them well if I don't take care of myself and be good to myself and have grace with myself and forgive myself. So I've been learning that, and I've been writing about that, doing better.
Well, thank you. So I can't ask you about what's next for you on screen, although I can say that you are in the new Exorcist movie that's coming out shortly, and that's called The Exorcist Believer. But after Pearly Victorious, is it going to be another 6 or 7 years before we see you on Broadway again?
I hope not. I do think... I do think that this piece is going to change my life, and I don't mean from the outside. You know, I'm not talking about any kind of thing that the world or the business could give me. This piece is going to change me from the inside. It already is. You know, what is important to me? It's shifting things. It's shifting the atmosphere. And I welcome that.
Yeah. Well, we will look forward to seeing what comes next. And in the meantime, there you are on stage at the Music Box in Pearly Victorious.
Yeah.
That was Leslie Odom Jr. from Pearly Victorious, now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. If you enjoyed this conversation here on Stagecraft, I'd really appreciate it if you took the time to rate and review us wherever you listen to podcasts. It really does help. Or tell a friend about Stagecraft. Find past episodes and subscribe at all the places you get your pods, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and on the Broadway Podcast Network, a great place to find more theater for your ears. Until next episode, find me on Instagram and Twitter at Gordon B. Cox. Thanks for listening, and see you at the theater.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.